All right. So we should be live. We're trying a brand new thing today on podcast number 7 of the Brothers Wisp. We're trying the Google Hangout. They now have the online air stream feature that also has, like, at the end of the cast, automatic posting to YouTube, which will save me a ton of time on the back end having to jack around with this stuff. So we're going from Skype to Google Hangout. So we're probably going to keep this one relatively short just to kind of get a feel for this thing, see how it goes. Andrew Cox, usually announce him first because we go alphabetical. He is out with either Ebola or the plague. I'm not sure which. But he's also knee-deep in routers, so he's sitting this one out. Next we have J.J. Boyd. I guess technically you would be alphabetically next or first. Anyway. That's neither here nor there. So we have J.J. Boyd with us and Justin Wilson, as well as myself, Greg Soule, always at the end. So we're going to keep it kind of loose today. Probably just have more fun. I mean, it's been a while since we've done a video, and honestly, I just like hanging out talking with you guys. I don't like trying to get too complex, although it seems like that's the direction we're moving. But good times had by all. So. One of the loose things on this is JJ, on top of being a Wisp owner, operator, licensed ham guy, he's also a weirdo with way too much time on his hands. So he read the Air Fiber manual, apparently, and he had some tidbits he wanted to share with us. He tried to get going beforehand, but I had to stop and tell him, wait, save it. Save it again. So what do you got, JJ?
On the, I just read through it today. I seen that they had posted it up. I don't know when they did it. They kind of snuck it in there. Some interesting things I seen in the manual was, you can obviously tell that it's the Motorola guys that are doing the product because, the pinout for the RJ, was it the RJ11 for the tone headphone apparatus that used to be with on the Canopy system, the pinout is from what I've seen exactly the same. So you could probably just take your dongles that you got for your Canopy stuff and plug it straight in this guy, and it would give you tones.
So when you're saying the tone stuff, that's the you plug it in and you can like directionally aim it, right?
Yeah. And something else in the kind of the grounding section. They're recommending putting a gigabit surge suppressor a meter away at the top and at the bottom for grounding and lightning suppression or ESD suppression. You know, you got $1,500 radio. You don't want to throw it away the first time a lightning storm comes through.
That's another play from the Motorola book too.
Yeah. And that was kind of the couple of they've got master and slave links, like software modes, and if you were shooting like you start on your master side, then you go master, slave, slave, master. So like if you were doing, you know, like a series of radios, like if you had to do it with like a real long shot with four radios. Instead of having like AP and station, you've got master and slave. And then if you're co-located, they all have to be like slaves or masters is what I took away from it. Just a lot of really neat stuff in there. It looks like the interface is verbatim AeroS. They cloned all the artwork.
So these guys, by default, they're going to be like transparent bridges, right? You can't. I mean, these aren't going to be routers at all, correct?
Right. I don't think that they have any ambition to do that. I also seen that by default GPS is off, and in-band management is disabled. So you can't. You actually have to like plug, you know, into the second Ethernet port to manage it by default. And then you can enable in-band management so that you can manage it from the network segment instead of having to be there physically plugged into the management port.
And that you know, that almost sounds like kind of a shift in mindset, like default safe instead of default everything wide open.
Which, right.
Not necessarily a bad thing.
No, it looked like it does support VLANs. I didn't see what size frames it supported. Didn't even think to look because for me, you know, I'm not running, you know, storage clusters on the end of it or anything, so I don't need ginormous bots. But it was a good read. It
that's cool. I mean, they're supposedly shipping these guys already, right?
Yeah, some people on the forum are getting them here and there. And I was reading one guy; it looked like he had about a 4 or 5 mile link set up, or he was going to have it set up. I was just kind of trolling everything, seeing what kind of performance people were getting out of them. It seems pretty encouraging.
That's cool. I know one of the early, I guess, beta testers. Is a good friend of Justin, and hopefully we'll be able to get that guy on here to kind of give us a scoop, because I guess he's had probably as much runtime on it as anybody. So,
yeah, Chuck has had it for a little while, and he's been saying it's performs as expected. He's you know, they're a little bit south of me in Kentucky, so they're pretty similar, you know, as far as rain and everything goes. But he said it's performing as advertised.
How long is his link? Do you know?
I don't know. I was gonna ask him if he wanted to join us one night and talk about it. They have a fairly large network now, so I think he may have a couple actually deployed.
Very nice. I've got a video camera project that I want to deploy one on for one of the local municipalities. They're going to be aggregating all their Toshiba video feeds back to a central DVR, and I think that it would fit the bill nicely.
Yeah, I was thinking possibly we have a pop on kind of a high-rise building, and then we have like a 7-story building. I was thinking about doing a shot in between the two. Especially in the frequency range, nobody's doing anything like that. On top of that building, since it's one of the higher ones, man, it's so saturated in 5.8. I mean, it's just nasty, dirty, and it's hard to really get good, solid throughput up there. So I'd be interested to see what it could do. Got a good line of sight.
I mean, the price isn't bad at all for the quality, you know, for what it is. I would love to see some lower frequency stuff. And I seen some stuff the FCC was talking about changing things up a little bit on the 6 gig license stuff. So,
yeah, that's one thing I was going to mention. Since the FCC appears to be relaxing some rules, I think we're going to see some more 6 gigahertz links being deployed now too. Traditionally, it's always been if you're running 6 gig, you had to run 6 foot dishes. Now they're saying in certain rural areas, and I don't know what the criteria is yet, you're going to be able to run 3 foot dishes.
That would be very nice. That would make it much more manageable.
Yeah, I mean, 6 gig is, you know, fairly underutilized because of those dish requirements.
Yeah, the only people I know that are running it are like television stations around here anyway. Television stations do backhaul on it, and some radio stations. But other than that, there's no, you know, not a whole lot of 6 gig stuff going on in my region. So.
No, there's not a whole lot of anything going on in your region, though, is there, JJ?
Yeah, you're a funny guy.
Well, no, I remember you talking about how quiet the noise floor is and all that stuff.
Yeah, when I get out in some of the rural areas, out in the farmland, it's very quiet. So most of my noise floor that I deal with in the 5 gigahertz, you know, it's like neg 98, so...
That's why our noise floor is fairly, at least in the 90s most of the time.
It's nice. It's a good environment to work with. The only problem is if we have a running joke. If we could sell internet to cows and corn, we'd be rich.
Yeah, cool. So let's see. Moving right along, there was, we'll skip to the, there was apparently a marketing video No. I take that back. It wasn't a marketing video. It was a TV station that was interviewing the MikroTik guys, and it was Arnis, one of the you know, the co-founders, the owners. They were interviewing, and like I was telling somebody, my Latvian's a little rusty, so I had to turn on the closed captioning. Yeah, but it was interesting because they showed their fab shop in there, and I had no idea that MikroTik even fabbed any of their own stuff.
But yeah, it's actually in Latvia. They farm it out to somebody, right? But it's still, you know, under, you know, real close to them, isn't it?
Oh yeah, yeah, it's still right there. I mean, they said that they still outsourced a good chunk of stuff to China.
The easy stuff.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, it's hard to keep up with volume, but I mean, that's what, you know, the Chinese are. I mean, they're made for that. They're ramped up. They're ready to go. So it makes sense.
It's the Far East. Okay, get it right.
Well, they said China. Closed captioning said China, buddy. So
no, it said the Far East.
Yeah, whatever. So one other thing that really caught my eye and made me laugh was they were asking him direct questions. What was it? It was, they said, so how many of these do you sell a year?
I love that part.
And he was basically like, let me think if I want to answer that. And she was like, you said that on a lot of questions. I was like, that is so, Mike, if you only knew. That's their default answer for everything. It's like Arnis is like coated in Teflon. Everything just kind of bling, bling. Bounces right off.
They would not make very good politicians. You know, there's no, you know, dancing around it. There's, you know, well, let me see if I want to answer that.
Well, you know, we kind of, now he's just like, nah, I'm not going to answer that.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't want to answer that either. It's a state-ran TV station. You know, he's probably telling them they sell like five of these things.
He's worried about taxes.
It's a hobby. We just do this as a hobby.
Gotcha. A hobby. Oh man, that's crazy. And then I also said, well, where was yeah, I mean, they showed the fab shop and stuff. I was like, well, where's all the engineers, man? Where's like where's Giannis and Normans and Sergey's and all those guys, you know? Where's the lifeblood? Where are the guys we see? I guess they keep them locked away in a cage somewhere when they're not at a mom.
They're off drinking is what they're doing.
Most of those guys, aren't they like support engineers and the actual like coders and programmers, they're like phantoms.
Yeah, I assume that they'll never release the identity of their actual programmers and board engineers and stuff like that.
Yeah, they would be hunted down.
Yeah,
there would be probably a brain drain, you know, to another entity.
Yeah, I'm sure they would get poached. It's, you know, it is what it is.
The biggest thing I took away from the video is in the beginning it shows where Latvia is. You know, how many times have you guys had to explain, well, I get my routers from this company in Latvia.
Yeah.
And people where are is like, that? Is that a real country?
Oh, what was it? When the, because, you know, the Olympics just happened not so long ago. And when the U.S. was playing Latvia in sand volleyball, I was like, hey, they're playing Latvia. And so I made a post on Facebook, something about how, you know, we're going to beat Latvia. And then like 5 minutes later, I was like, never mind. Latvia kind of beat us. And then somebody posted on there and they were like, because they had heard this. They said, somebody was like, where's Latvia? And they said, oh, they're like in third place. They're like in the semifinals. What are you talking about? And they're like, no, geographically. Where? Yeah. What? Like, we have no idea where that is.
I had no idea until I was introduced to MikroTik and SAF.
SAF.
Yeah. Technica, whatever.
That's weird. I saw another company called Zabbix. A friend of mine told me that sounds like one of those online auction sites. But it's like a cross between Cacti and Nagios or whatever. And they're actually out of Latvia.
Very nice.
Ooh. Are they really?
Yeah, interesting. I wonder if there's any cross-pollination there. They know each other. The BFFs.
There's a lot of talent in those Baltic states right now in communications.
But it seems like they're really investing in their people.
I mean, the AeroS team is out of Lithuania. So
Was it really?
Yeah.
Hmm. That's cool. Speaking of marketing videos, they also did a marketing video. What was it, the 951, I think?
I haven't seen this.
You haven't seen that?
Yeah.
It's up, it's, if you go to their, if you go to microtech.com, it's actually up on the webpage, and we'll link to it. Let me see. It's kind of funny. It's very... It feels like the market, like, what was my comment? The marketing wars have begun. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like how Ubiquiti did their Unify commercial, how it was all swoopy, and this is the future, and robots will control everything.
You're talking about the Unify thing?
Yeah. So it's like, it's almost, you know, it's almost like starting to compete with that. Obviously, they aren't making ridiculous claims, but it was funny because, you know, it's really well produced and got that kind of Mac look and feel, round corners on everything.
I've not seen this. How did I miss that?
I don't know, man. You had your head up your butt.
I have.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty funny. So it's, I think it's, you know what? It's time, you know, because Microtech doesn't market. You know, they don't market anything. They just, if you build it, they will come. And so it's about time they actually start, you know, like mounting some kind of campaign to.
Only $45. Look at that.
Yeah, it's stupid cheap. It's ridiculous.
Let's see here. I gotta watch it.
You gotta watch it? Pause it, Joel. You can wait. You can wait a minute. So, so one other thing that we have on the list is three, because from the feedback so far, it seems like at least most of the people that aren't so lazy to give us feedback, all the rest of you guys just watching and not saying anything, is that most people are beginners or kind of intermediate in the WISP industry, and you know they want to hear more basic stuff, especially more. I've heard several people ask about tower information, and really, excuse me, JJ and Justin are the masters of that domain. I'm not even going to attempt to begin. I mean, I've got a couple of towers, but I'm sure they're kludged together. I'm fairly certain you're not supposed to code everything in duct tape and JB Weld. So I'm not going to say anything. But no. But these guys, hopefully at some point we'll talk about it. That doesn't actually have to be.
Yeah, we can.
You know, you can.
Yeah, we can put together a tower.
Yeah, kind of put some
pictures and everything.
So back to the original thought is the basic sort of thing. So that would be task for today was just. Whenever you first get a router board, what's the, you know, kind of the first three things you do to it before you, you know, do anything else, I guess, you know, if you're going to put it in production. I was going to say the first three things I do is when I first boot it up and connect to it, I click the little button that says remove default configuration, and I always just wipe it clean slate. Not to say that there's problems with that now, but I've seen it before, and I don't know. I just like everything just gone, and so I know precisely everything that's in there. What's the second thing I do? I disable all unused services. So in IP services, I turn off everything but Winbox, and then I'll just, you know, say you know, allow for my management subnet to connect in via Winbox. And then the third thing I can say is comment everything like crazy. Like in the interfaces, if you don't want to change interface names, you know, from Ether 1, Ether 2, if you put a comment later on in configurations, when there's the option, a drop down box, like a combo box that has the different interfaces, off to the right, you'll actually see the comment next that you put on the interface. So if you say, you know, Ether 1 goes to internet, whenever you're choosing that as an option later on, it'll actually say Ether 1, and then over next to it goes to internet. So comments everywhere help, and whenever you do in your comments, I always put my name and the date and the purpose for the configuration change. That way, somebody, JJ jumps into a router and makes a change, yesterday, I'll be able to go in and look and say, okay, well, these are the things that JJ did, and let me disable this, you know, just troubleshooting, things like that. So on to, who wants to go next?
I can go ahead, Justin.
One of the first things I do is I name the router. I give it some sort of name. That way, if I'm working with multiple routers, you know, I'm not getting confused, because I've done that before. I've pasted the wrong thing in, and it took me a little bit to figure it out. I'll do that. I'll upgrade or downgrade the OS before I do anything. You know, depending on some networks, you know, they have, you know, certain versions that they've approved. So I'll get the OS on them. Probably the third thing that's kind of that, Greg doesn't do, because I do all the things you do too, Greg. I'd say probably the third thing would be I disable all the unneeded packages. I try to get all the reboot stuff done right away. That way, if anything happens, you know, I know the board's, you know, got issues. So I'll go in, and if it's a wired router, I'll disable and remove the wireless package and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's all of those are, man, tremendous points. Like the first one, when you name the router and you go to, say, IP neighbors, the router you're connected to, its name will actually show up in the list too. Yep. So if you're having to start, you know, something goes haywire and you're having a Mac telnet around, you know, you can see which router's which, hanging off what interface. You go into a brand new network, you know, to fix a problem of theirs, you can quickly kind of, you know, find your way through. That's terrific. And then disabling packages. If you have a package disabled and there's a bug in it, it's not going to affect you.
Yeah.
You got it turned off, can't hurt you. So, I mean, those are tremendous, tremendous starting points. As well as the upgrade things. Or at least make sure everything's on the same revision. I've seen certain packages, like especially in like IPsec, where you'll have, you know, say 4.11 and a 4.12, and they just, you can't get the tunnel to come up for some reason.
Yeah,
you put them both either on 4.11 or both on 4.12, works great. So just oddities like that, making sure everything's consistent, can really fix things.
Okay, first thing I do is change the password.
You just you're very untrusting, JJ. That's your problem.
I know. No, I just it has no password by default, you know. And I definitely do firmware upgrade, downgrade, depending on where I'm going to be using the router. I may I mean, you guys kind of took all the obvious things.
That's why I went first.
So put me out here to come up with some creative things, I guess. Usually whenever I set one up, like if it's like a gateway for a company or something, I'll kill all the services that are running. I like the little routine where you blacklist brute forcers, like coming on the input chain. I really like that. I put that on everything. It just kind of lets you see how much attention your little router gets from mostly the Chinese.
Yeah. Talking about brute forcers, in all versions prior to 5.18, there was a DOS exploit available on the MikroTik, which they patched in 5.18 and should be beyond that, and that was with Winbox. So if you just disable Winbox from the outside, you should be okay. But if you leave it open, say if you leave it open, especially to the world, you might look at least on your internet-facing devices, upgrading.
But definitely change that password, because it surprised me originally that it's just, you know, blank. I thought that there would be something there.
If you throw a default MikroTik up and you put a public IP, how long do you think it takes before you start seeing SSH attempts on root?
Immediate. I mean, probably within 2 hours. Especially since all of our IPs are in a co-location facility, I think that these guys just target those IPs already because they know that there's significant, you know, resources there if they compromise the machine on any of those subnets.
So, yeah.
That's my assumption anyway, because I get thousands. I mean, if I go in and look right now in my blacklist for SSH on my input on my core router, I probably see there's probably 500 in there, and I purge them every, I think, 12 hours. They only hang around for 12 hours. So, I really like that that little script that you put up on your blog a little bit ago, Greg, about the denial of service firewall rules that you put up there.
Oh, yeah.
With your mangle, not your mangle, but your port knocking routine and that stuff. So.
Yeah, that's kind of it's a good starting point, and I'll throw a link in there. What does it kind of do? It does it blocks spoof traffic coming inbound as well. So you not only will it block the RFC 1918, but the multicast stuff. But you put in your public blocks, and that way anybody sourced from your addressing doesn't get to come in, because you'll see people do like Smurf attacks and stuff like that. You can only do so many ICMP, so ICMP rate limiting to keep down.
I had a little bit of a problem with that one, the way that it was written. Was, because I run, I've got like three programs. I run the Dude and like Nagios and PRTG, all ping stuff on the inside of my network. And it was actually trapping that. So I wrote an additional rule to say not these IPs.
Did you throw in like an address list or something in there?
Yeah.
Well, if you did that, why didn't you post that to the comment section?
Because I'm lazy.
You're stingy. That's what it is.
I'm not stingy. Not at all.
Yeah. So it also has kind of the port knock routine, and then it's got brute force capturing stuff in there. What's funny is I think it's still in the script too. I have tarpit in there, so if people are trying to do TCP based attacks, then it goes ahead and tarpit them. And tarpit's crazy because what it does is if somebody tries to establish a connection and you have tarpit enabled for that rule, it'll actually half open the session and just sit there and hold it. So if people are doing automated scripts, like brute force scripts to try and log in, and they get that half open session, it'll just sit there and wait and attempt to connect in. So it's really kind of an interesting way to stick it to them, because it'll kill their scripts. And so a customer of ours, I put that on their router, and they were getting like a compliance scan. I think it was a PCI compliance scan. And they had failed before, and the scan took 35 minutes, I think, on the failed attempt. And then on the next attempt, it ran for 8.5 hours, and it reported as every single TCP port as open. So they sent back an email saying, your firewall might be blocking this. But you need to fix this, because it's going to make you fail every time. And as I explained it to them, I was like, yeah, this is the way it's supposed to work, because it murdered your scan, right? And they're like, yeah, it actually put us behind schedule on five different customers. And I was like, oh, sorry about that. So I changed the tarpit to just a straight drop, and their scan worked successfully. So if you guys ever see that hit, use caution. Watch out for that.
Very, very nice. There was one more that I was thinking of when Justin was talking, and it just eluded me. It was a good one too. It'll come to me.
He was talking about naming the router. Number two, he said upgrade, and number three,
Name the router, upgrade it, and what was the other thing? Oh, disable packages.
Is that jogging anything?
No.
Nah.
But the if I'm using it on like the inside of my network, another thing that I do, I run OSPF everywhere, and so if I'm using that, especially across Ubiquiti, you have to run NBMA. I know that that's kind of a little far down the rabbit hole for.
And it's also debatable, too. I have networks running Ubiquiti that I don't have to run NBMA, but I also have two networks that I have to.
Exactly. What's insane, though, is I have some networks where identical configuration, identical hardware, I have to run non-broadcast multi-access on my OSPF, and on identical hardware, identical configuration, just somewhere else, I don't have to, and
yeah.
It works. Same versions on everything. It's just the craziest thing.
I don't know what causes it, but for me, I find that it'll run fine for a while if I'm using broadcast, and then it's like one day it just stops. It's just
see, I only run point to point or NVMe. I don't run, you know, broadcast or anything like that.
So you're definitely always doing unicast.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. So just for a quick update, what we're talking about is by default, OSPF uses multicast traffic to send its updates, do its peering relationships, the hellos, and all that stuff. And for some reason, Ubiquiti occasionally across their links, well, not necessarily occasionally.
Grab a charger.
Yeah. You get like a 50-50. It will Pac-Man your multicast traffic and just won't get across, so your OSPF won't work. So if you turn it to non-broadcast multi-access and you put in your neighbor statements and all that good stuff, it just uses unicast traffic. Doesn't use multicast anymore, so it usually kind of just fixes everything magically.
And that's what point-to-point does as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's more efficient, I guess, you know, because it's not actually multicast that stuff. It's just unicast right to this one guy. Just, bam, laser focus.
Yeah, the way I look at it, the way I explained it to somebody the other day was, you know, it's not spending all this time looking for other people. It's found its neighbor, and it says, okay, you're my neighbor. I know who you are now. I'm not going to waste time, you know, broadcasting for other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just a lot more efficient.
But yeah, I've seen networks where it has to be NVMe to work, or else, you know, it'll just drop off at random times, and you know, you have to either disable something in OSPF to kickstart it, or you know, reboot the router.
Yeah, and this is not necessarily because I mean, some people are going to say, well, you know, that's a MikroTik problem going across the link. I've had Cisco equipment have the exact same OSPF issues going across Ubiquiti links, so it's a Ubiquiti thing.
I think so too, and I think they know it. They just don't have a good solution for it.
Right.
I've also run really short hello intervals. I've got my one link that I'm doing. I think like 5 second hellos on it.
Okay.
So that if I do get something that drops out, it's not sitting there for 80 seconds on, you know, declaring that router dead. It converges much faster, so you might get a little bit of wackiness from time to time, but it seems for me to work better that way.
I mean, also OSPF, that's what it's designed for. It's designed to reconverge quickly, you know, with those low hello intervals, as long as you don't have, you know, a lot of latency or weirdness. I mean, that's what it's made for. So it's made to be quick. Good stuff.
Indeed.
All right, so let me jump over to the list. Let me see if I got anything on here. We talked about the funny video, that script. I put up that script. I think that's about all I've got. That's all I've done.
Yeah, the only thing I don't see about the, you know, the Google Hangout is how long we've been on air.
Oh, yeah, I don't have a clue. It seems like so far it's done pretty well. Your video hasn't dropped out once. Well, actually, it kind of blinked a little bit, Justin, but it's not like Skype that crashes on your Mac all the time, so it's doing pretty good.
Yeah.
Are you running Safari, Justin?
I'm running Chrome.
Okay. That probably helps.
Yeah, okay. I'm sure, you know, Chrome should work good with Google+.
Speaking of your Mac, a thing we talked about earlier, and I verified from Justin, is that when you upgrade to Lion, the new version that's out, it seems to jack up wireless cards. Because I've gotten several questions like, hey, I upgraded to Lion, now my MikroTiks don't work. I can't connect them. But apparently that's more a Lion problem than anything else, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Apple historically has had problems with wireless with every new upgrade, it seems. You know, they always, if you look on the forums, you know, every new upgrade for the past 4 or 5, they've, you know, hey, I'm having a wireless problem, oh, I am too, and all of a sudden you got, you know, 200 of them in the forum. And then if you read the change logs, the next couple revisions usually fix some sort of wireless issue.
Gotcha. I'm of the opinion that the airports, airport extremes, anything with the airport name in it is jank. Like, it seems like we have more problems with those on our network. like people calling and saying, you know, oh, I got this Airport Extreme or this time module capsule.
Yeah, I don't like any of their access points.
It's just like, gosh, it's always the Apple things. It seems like they work fine for about 6 months to a year, then they just nosedive. It's like,
well, I mean, by then it's time to upgrade to something new anyway. So
the newest router grade is supposed to be timeless. You know? Set it there.
Not,
and it does
not Apple products, brother. You gotta stay on top. You gotta stay on top of those new your new MacBook, and then you gotta get the new iPhone, so you can look good when you get out of your Jetta, you know, and you're walking into Starbucks.
Sam drives a Jetta. He's not an Apple guy.
Sam isn't a human. He is a crazy person.
Sam's an enigma.
He is. What is Sam?
We got to get Sam on here one time, JJ.
Sam's a mad scientist.
Definitely. I feel like every day I go to work, it's like working with Doc Brown.
You just wait for the Libyans to pull up?
Yeah. It's always something. Today, we're building this super Arduino. It's got, you know, a time chip on it, and it's got a built-in WizNet Ethernet interface, and it'll still take standard shields. And so today he was playing with an LCD on it. He had like a barometric pressure sensor and a temperature sensor. And he basically had himself a fancy thermostat or a thermometer. It was, funny stuff, but he spent the entire day doing that. So
crazy. All right. So, JJ, what's something you've done interesting in the last, I guess, couple weeks? One thing.
I'm pretty stale here lately. I don't know.
Didn't you just go tubing?
Yeah. Yeah, for Kim's birthday, we went tubing down a river here, and it was a lot of fun. It was a four-hour tube trip. And sometimes this particular river, I'm like, what am I doing on this river in a tube? You know, it's like I need a raft.
Is it pretty violent? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. There's places that are pretty aggressive. It's like, what am I doing on this river in a tube? Seriously. So, but the rest of the time, it's really fun. But there are places you're like, I'm going to die. All they're going to find is a tube.
They're gonna find me with an inner tube around me, popped.
Yeah,
hilarious.
So I got the ones, you know. We've been doing this pretty much every year for the last few years for Kim's birthday, and you know they rent you this little dinky one. And I'm a big guy, so you know it's like me floating on top of a SpaghettiO or something going down the river. And so I got on eBay and bought some, you know. Some like river lounges, you know, it's got like a pillow and everything. And we used those this time, so it was great. You know, usually, you know, after 4 hours of holding your head up, you know,
yeah,
you're done, you're beat. And I took an oar with me this time. It was
next time you're gonna have a trolling motor hooked up.
Yeah.
Yeah, good time.
For sure. That's all right, Justin. That was fun.
We'll give it up. My big projects for the past a week, and we all know Rick from Ohio. We've been rebuilding a good part of his network. He's taking and he's putting Ubitix on Ubiquiti antennas. So we've been going over, and we got four sites rebuilt now. And the performance out of them have been pretty good, really. He's going from 430.
He bought me a steak dinner in Phoenix. It was good.
Did he? Yeah. Rick's a good guy.
Oh yeah, he's a super guy.
So he's getting the network that he inherited in order. So we've had some long days over there. You know, it takes a lot of work to get three sectors and two backhauls down, and you know, replace them and get them all aligned and everything else.
What kind of legacy hardware are you guys taking down?
He's got a lot of 433 boards. He has a lot of, you know, 433s with two or three cards in them. So the board itself is a definite failure.
Are you guys running NV2 on that stuff?
He's had some issues with NV2, and that's something we're going to maybe talk about the next one. We've been emailing MikroTik back and forth on NV2, and one of their last recommendations was we downgraded from 519 to 511 at their recommendation.
Wow.
And that did not help it. I think it has to do with encryption. If we turn off encryption on the clients, what happens is the clients will just randomly drop.
Okay.
And they won't come back. We either have to, boot the card or do something to bounce it. Then they'll come back for a little bit. Well, in our tests so far, we've been able to keep clients on by disabling encryption. So I think NV2 may have a problem with
what encryption. Kind of encryption are you running? Is it like AES, TKIP, or
it's AES? We've tried WPA and WPA2.
Did you send them a link to your little post about do you need encryption?
Yep, yeah. I did.
I remember when Rick called me or emailed me asking me about Tower Climbers. The first thing I said was Justin Wilson.
Yeah, we've
He's
been
like,
over there.
Is he good? And I said, there's nobody else. Don't want to call anybody else. Just call Justin.
We've been over there about six times now. He's had some bad luck with some storms. He's got some competitors with some old frequency hoppers really, really messing with him. So
yeah. We exchanged emails about a pig farmer one day.
we went back and forth and over some stuff. Interference, from just some guy. I don't know that it was necessarily specifically malicious, but it sure felt like it. So,
But yeah, put that on the docket for maybe next time. I'll have some more information on the NV2 and point to multipoint.
Cool.
I would like to hear that.
All right. So last, let's see, what have I done? We'll see. 2 weeks ago, I had the plague. Apparently, I gave it to Andrew. I don't know. I was down for about a week. And then last week, every year we go to the beach, so we went to the beach. This year, we went to a little peninsula, so we got to ride a ferry, which is cool. We drive your car on there. Kids thought that was insane. The car and a boat. It's going across the water. And then let's see what else. Made a rubber band gun out of...
The rubber band gun is cool.
Yeah. I like to... What's the easiest way I can do this? So it was like 9-shot, clothespins, a piece of wire, and a piece of PVC pipe. That was like it. It took probably a total of 5 to 10 minutes. So it was pretty fun.
Looked like you were trying to overcomplicate it with your first iteration.
Yeah, I mean, you got the wheels and the gears and the things. But what it really is, I'm just too lazy. I was like, I made the thing, but... This is going to take like another 2 hours. Why? What can I do in the next 5 minutes?
So. The kids are already falling asleep. Dad, we just want to shoot rubber bands.
It didn't take long. And they, so I like to call it like I started like loading it all up and I would yell like sonic boom and then I'd shoot them all at once. Something like that. I'd yell sonic boom, wait 2 seconds. That way, every time I said it, they would cringe.
I see Greg chasing them through the house with his, they got the 1-shot wonders, and he's got the 9-shot or whatever.
And the funny thing is like when you give it to them, you say, okay, well, back up and then shoot. But no, they want to get like 6 inches from you and like shoot you in the face. It's like, okay. Rule one. What's rule one? Don't shoot me in the face. Did you just shoot me in the face? Yeah. Okay, well, don't do that anymore. You know? 5 minutes later, what was rule one again? Why did you shoot me in the face?
Because it's funny. It gets a reaction.
Yeah. It leaves a mark. I can tell where I hit you. Good.
Yeah. That's great. Kids Next year, we'll be taking them to play paintball.
I haven't done that. Since I was 17, I think. It's been a long time.
I really enjoyed that growing up.
I did too. So.
I think this Google Hangout thing's going to work well.
I think it will. So let's wrap it up. Sorry, let's put a bow on it. And I think we've been going for probably about 40 minutes, something like that. It's just for us not having anything to talk about, that's a long time. So. So let's.
Did you get a hold of the other Andrew, the We were
Andrew Thrift. Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah, he had to go and replace a router. Excuse me. And he never made it back. He said he had it. He had, what did he call it? It was a 750. He called it like a plastic fantastic. He said he had to go replace it.
That's and great.
Yeah, he hasn't signed back in yet. So.
Isn't it you that went in and replaced some Cisco chassis with a 750 or something? I was talking to somebody one time that their customer had a broken chassis of some sorts, and he just walked in and threw that down and wrote a config for it and said, there you go.
No, I had a 2621, and it's got the big hardware module bay. So I got the thing sent right here.
You got a blog post about that, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, so I took a piece of cardboard and put silver duct tape over it and then put a 750 inside the hardware slot and then plugged it all in. I'm not going to lie and say that it looks factory, but it was pretty funny at the time.
That's great.
Yeah. One thing I wish MicroTix had was a chassis that would terminate T1s. So many people amazingly still use T1s. I'll get them to order like a Cisco 2600 for like $50, and you can get a $10 T1 card.
Yeah.
So, and it's only like $60 investment, but still, you know, if it was all rolled into one thing, I mean, I wouldn't do it for more than $60 per T1 interface, but I don't know. I guess that's all going the way of the dodo.
Indeed.
Now that I've said that, like in the data center, almost every customer we have has at least one T1. And then like every bank I work with has at least one T1. And you know, it's like, so you can't get away. And like even, you know what I found is like some of the big IBM equipment, you think, you know, IBM, something brand new, like a big P6. You know, the only way, like their call home feature and their back door in, like the only way for them to configure it out of band sometimes is with a modem. So you actually have to run a POTS line to these things.
Wow.
So if they have a problem, they phone out. That's their only method to do it.
Well, if you buy a brand new, you know, $5 million Nortel switch, like a telco would use, it comes with a 300 baud modem. That's how you talk to it.
It's crazy. It's crazy. It's just...
You know, it's like Sam says whenever, you know, he's building something or when he used to work and build satellites, he said, don't change it. He's like, the hammer's not been changed in like 5,000 years. It works.
True.
But now we have nail guns.
Yeah, but, you know.
And we have palm and we have palm hammers. And then you can always build a better hammer.
Oh, yeah. You definitely can. But
do you
How about that Mars rover? That was...
Man, we got to quit talking. All right, we'll end the cast, and then I'll call you guys again, and then we'll just talk. So that's what we're going to do. All right, guys. So from us here at the Brothers of Wisp, obviously, thank you all. We couldn't do this without you. Well, actually, we are doing it without you because you guys are too lazy to give us feedback. But yeah, seriously, thank you guys. Any questions, comments, anything you want to see us do, hit us up. And bye from Greg Soule.
See you guys later. Thank you.
All right. Justin dropped off just in time.
Yeah, it's at Mac again.
All right. Bye, everybody.